Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 7th of May, recording at a late 10:15 p.m. British Standard Time. Late because I spent most of the day in the city today. Now, this is the big picture, long-term, weekly audio. So, as before, I'll start with stock markets. As far as the big picture is concerned on Wall Street, this is a secular bear market, and I maintain that we have been completing the rather good technical bull or medium-term recovery within this overall secular bear market. Now, a number of people, and particularly some of my new subscribers, may say, well, you know, David, how can this be a secular bear market? After all, the U.S. economy is doing well, the jobs figures today were absolutely terrific, the profits have been exceptionally good, and yes, all that's true, and I had a young colleague come through and point that out to me and say, well, look, the news was actually quite good, yet the stock market's fallen very sharply. And then when I was passing one of the earlier rooms not too long ago, one of the outside rooms not too long ago, where there's a television which is permanently on what Peter Bennett refers to as Tout TV, those are the financial channels, there was an extremely respectable looking a commentator there saying that couldn't understand what markets were doing because this was a guest, not one of the presenters, saying that the news was all so good, seemed to be so good for bonds and so good for stock markets. Well, my point on this all along is that we get once a generational cycles where a whole process is learned and then it's unlearned for the next generation then to go through the same sequence. And in other words, we had a big secular bull market in global equities, and markets went up and up and up, and everybody got the message sooner or later that it paid to buy and hold. And we had a generation of expanding PE ratios. When bubbles burst, we usually get a generation of contracting PE ratios. And that's because, it's not because the economy goes all to hell, although usually there are more economic problems in a post-bubble, for a post-bubble decade or two. But it's because investors learn once again that the stock market's a two-way street. And therefore, I would expect to see valuations contract over time. They contract partly through growth, which is the positive side, and the negative side is that investors are willing to pay less for stocks over the long term. Now, as far as markets are concerned right now, we have a lot of uncertainties that are worrying people. They're well, less of an uncertainty as far as the U.S. interest rate factor is concerned, because as a former Fed governor was saying on the same Tout TV, that it's a no-brainer that interest rates are going to go up. And the stronger the economic reports are, the sooner that is going to be, or the more likely people are to extrapolate somewhat higher rates. So the big uncertainty regarding rates is not will they raise rates or even will they raise rates this year. It's how much will they actually raise rates. And of course, not even the Fed knows that, so I wouldn't even begin to hazard a guess, except that they can only go up from here. Then we have the uncertainty over the presidential election, because it's definitely a horse race here, basically neck and neck in the polls, and so that's a little unsettling for the markets. And then there is the sad deterioration of events in the Middle East and in Iraq, so that's causing more problems in the market. And these are things that people haven't been able to ignore, although they tried to until recently, as I pointed out. I felt that people were turning a blind eye to all these issues that I've just mentioned, And we're concentrating entirely on the good GDP figures and the good earnings figures, which is, of course, what last year's rally and the first quarter of this year's rally were all about. You know, some people still think that the stock market is efficient and therefore like some machine that it's able to assess all information and discount all factors immediately. And what nonsense, because the stock market, or the prices that we get in the stock market, are determined by this crowd, this manic, depressive, emotional crowd of investors. And we see what we want to see. And people have wanted to see the good news, they focused on that, but you reach a point where you can't ignore the bad news anymore. It's like that, and what's happened really in the last week in stock markets is a little bit like that cartoon figure that would go running at full tilt and run off the edge of a cliff, and it would keep going for or keep running for a while, then pause, look down, oh my God, and then plummet. So that's the type of situation we're in right now for stock markets. Now, is this the big one? Or are we going all the way back down? Well, it could be, but certainly we're in for at minimum a squall. Could it also be a situation where stock markets fall into, say, the middle or late summer and then stage a seasonal rally prior to the US presidential election? Well, the Fed, I imagine, and certainly the Bush administration would like to see that rally occur, but of course they may not be able to manage that, but there may well be some effort to do so, and that could easily be the scenario that plays out. For that reason, I haven't chopped absolutely everything out, but I have hedged fully in terms of my equity positions. I've mentioned before, it's not a symmetrical hedge, but I am definitely net short in here, and I've actually increased my net short position. One of the reasons I've increased it is we've been getting some follow-through on the downside now. So all those short positions are in profit, and therefore I'm able to place in the money stops as I have done. And in the money stop means that unless the market just gaps way up over my stop level, most unlikely with stock market futures, they can gap downwards if there's some sudden shock in the marketplace, but they seldom gap upwards in an enormous way, and it's inconceivable to think what factor would actually cause that to happen. So I basically can't lose. I've got a free ride. What I can lose, of course, is a lot of the paper profits that I have right now. So that's what's at risk. But I want to run those. I see no technical reason not to run those positions right now, and I think we'll at least see tests of the lows, the reaction lows that we saw a month or two ago. Now, have I covered all those positions with in the money, or protected all those positions rather with in the money stops? And the answer on that is no. I haven't got a stop on that NASDAQ position that I just reopened yesterday, having taken the profits earlier on, and then it moved up a little bit yesterday, and I decided to go back in, but I will put in a stop to protect that on Monday, almost certainly. And today, with those positions protected, I shorted the S&P 500 index, and I may well put in a stop on that on Monday. And there's a good chance that I'll be lowering my trailing stops, my in-the-money stops on the European contracts on Monday, because Wall Street closed really quite a bit lower today than where it was trading when the European markets actually closed. So to run through this, we've had quite a weak day across the boards. Asian markets down, the European markets almost all on the downside, although they narrowed the declines, as say, because Wall Street came in a little bit. Or had rallied after the earlier sell-off, but Dow closed down 123, nearly 124 points, 15 and a quarter on the S&P, and nearly 20 points on the NASDAQ composite, all over 1%. Those declines. Now, to get back to the big theme, though, this Wall Street secular bear market. I've been saying recently that of the three things markets can do, up, sideways, or down, that the odds are very heavily in favor of sideways to down, and really for all markets. If there are any exceptions, the most likely exceptions would be in Asia, but they're not there are not turning out or proving to be any exceptions, and there won't be while this selling squall at least is underway. As a matter of fact, some of those Asian markets may demonstrate their often high beta status, in other words, by falling more during this overall correction. Now, with a net short position overall, I'm far less concerned about riding down some of the Asian positions that I like on a very on a very long-term basis. And as I say, one reason for holding onto those is because I think there's a 50-50 chance that we could see a rally occur in the mid to late summer period. Now, what about those Asian markets in the context of and the European markets and the emerging markets generally around the world in the context of Wall Street's secular bear trend? Well, this remains the most, and Wall Street does remain, of course, the most influential and the largest stock market overall. Europe never uncouples from Wall Street beyond a very, very short-term move. So I've always regarded Europe as just a high beta version of Wall Street, and it'll track it. So therefore, by association, by influence, Europe is very much in a long-term secular bear market trend as well. Now, some of the emerging markets where that are strong in commodities, and as a number of them are, and energy, you don't get any stronger in those two categories than Russia, will certainly uncouple from time to time. Some of the Asian markets can do so, but not during the biggest selling squalls, nor will Russia during the biggest selling squalls that we see on Wall Street. And there's a risk that we could get quite a sharp sell-off in here over the short term. And I would, but again, I would maintain that when we get the sharp sell-offs, that Asia will generally bounce back more quickly than most of the other markets, and I would include Japan in that. Although people are having a big flap about Japan right now because of the China slowdown, I don't think that will hit Japan as much as some people are beginning to suspect. For one thing, I think it'll largely be in the building construction area where we'll see the slowdown, and Japan isn't sending cement and raw materials to China the way a number of other countries are, but it has certainly been sending precision factory machinery, and that may well continue, or may not slow up all that much. Okay, now moving on, so I don't keep you all night on this audio, or all day whenever you're listening to it. Bond markets. This really is an important area, and the U.S. bond market took another big hit in here today on those jobs figures. And you'll see the chart. I put it up as a mystery chart, of course, but it's also covered further on in the day's in the day's comment. And you see that big top area. We are in my view, say last June, a secular bull market. I think it was about 18 years in the U.S. market in government bonds ended. You see that top in terms of bond prices back in June. Then the slump down to that August low, then the gradual recovery, the right-hand extension phase of the top. Now we've seen the bond market fall very rapidly back down towards the August low. As you might have read, I took a profit on my renewed short position that I put out yesterday on the U.S. Treasury bonds, partly because I could also short a little more JGBs at a slightly higher level. But looking at that pattern overall, I think we won't get much more than a dead cat bounce. So I'd like to see a little bit more to enable me to build up a bigger bond, U.S. Treasury bond short position at somewhat higher levels. And that market is oversold the short term, as you know. But as far as I'm concerned, this is just a major top area nearing completion. And I expect to be short U.S. Treasury bonds more often than not. Incidentally, in the C2F2 report that Mark Lowry prepares as one of our sister publications here covering futures markets, he's short the UK gilts. They got nailed in here today. There's usually a high degree of commonality in terms of the trends for these government bond markets. Now, as far as that commentator from one of the financial institutions that I mentioned on a financial news program today, saying that today's information was good news for bonds, I don't know what planet he's on here today. You just look at this bond market situation. Interest rates, short-term interest rates, have got to go up. And people could say, okay, a lot of that's discounted, and maybe the bond market even rallies when we get the first interest rate hike. That could easily occur. Sell the rumor, buy the news type of thing. But that won't affect the secular bear trend that's beginning to develop here. Consider how the entire world talked itself into a big deflation scenario for the United States last year. Consider the amount of borrowing that's taken place as far as the government's concerned. Consider the size of the deficits. Consider the unchecked borrowing going on into the future. Consider the enormous demand from treasury bonds that came from Japan and China, and we certainly can't extrapolate that trend into perpetuity. Bottom line, as I've said many times before, if the US government, needs to borrow so much, do we really want to be lending it to them? And I don't. As I say, I expected that I'll be short bonds far more often than not, and the not phases will be when I'm out of the market. And because even though I think I've been exceptionally bearish in terms of the potential for this market, I'll probably find myself chasing it down more often than not, because when these major secular trends do start to unfold, markets usually go beyond levels that even the people who had forecast the moves were emotionally prepared for. Okay, enough on all that. What about the currency markets? Here we don't get the same once in a generational trends, or we very seldom do, largely because, or partly because at least, no central bank wants a strong currency beyond the long medium term, I'll put it. Another new it would be several years. And in this environment of with so much competition in terms of manufacturing and also services, that and that's not going to change as these developing countries grow and more of them prosper. There'll be even more competition, not only in manufacturing but certainly in services as well. And against I've lost the train of my thought. Against that background, any country that experiences a strong currency for more than a year or two will soon finds itself in trouble. And it just starts to the strong currency starts to nail operating profits. And of course, when that happens, then they either talk the currency down, but the most effective way of getting it down is just to print more of the stuff. And we've seen plenty of that plenty of that recently. Now, what did happen here today was that we had a big dynamic in favor of the U.S. dollar. In other words, the U.S. dollar surged in here today. Remember all those people who were talking about dollar yen and saying that the moment it went under 105, it was going to go straight down to 100, 90, 80. Well, it's at 112.21 here today, up 245. Euro dollar. Now, I've been saying in the last few days that we had seen at least some sort of bottom in there, and that we'd broken the consistency of that gradual ranging downtrend for the euro against the U.S. dollar. But on these employment figures, the dollar really surged. It was. And so the euro fell nearly 2 cents, down to 118.83. So that's what that's done. Really, has reinstated the case that there's no conclusive evidence yet that the dollar's technical rally is over. Now, a lot of us, myself included, think that. The dollar is unlikely to appreciate all that much, and that certainly that would might well unnerve the Fed, and it would certainly unnerve the U.S. administration, I think, during an election year. The most uncomfortable part about being part of that consensus is that it is a consensus. But what a number of people have mentioned on numerous occasions is the size of this U.S. dollar carry trade. In other words, all the people who have borrowed and shorted U.S. dollars, and there remains scope to squeeze more of those people out of the market. So that factor remains, and I say bottom line here, I cannot yet say that we have any conclusive technical evidence that the dollar has bottomed. My hunch is that, I beg your pardon, that the dollar's current rally has peaked. My feeling is that despite that carry trade possible squeeze situation, that's more likely to play out slowly rather than rapidly, and I mean, markets often surprise me, but I'd be surprised to see the dollar surge beyond the short term at best. But at this stage, you should I would not be looking for a quick, rapid deterioration of the dollar. I'll put it this way, best thing to do is to wait for the technical signals, and we've just seen an upward dynamic by the dollar today. Okay, if you look at that, you look at a euro-dollar chart, you'll see that in the form of a downward dynamic by the euro against the greenback, and until we get a dynamic in the opposite direction, I'd back the signal we've just seen. That's just practical, disciplined technical analysis. I've only got one currency position here right now because I think this is tricky in this environment. Well, they're all tricky, but the currency's more tricky than other markets in this particular environment. But that position is euro yen, where I've got an in the money stop, and that's had a reasonably good day here today, close at 133.37. Elsewhere, the dollar's strength is causing some problems for me in terms of my move back into the supply inelasticity metal plays. And mainly in silver, where I've been cavalier in terms of using that baby steps tactic, which is ideal for a market that's forming a base formation and is fundamentally cheap is in an established sideways ranging trend over some time period, whereas I was using it in a catch a falling knife type of situation. These markets can so easily overshoot and go further than one would think. So I'll have to try to finesse my way out of this, which will be a lot easier if the market is volatile, and by volatile I mean in terms of a two-way street. We've seen that recently, but silver closed quite near the lows in here today on the July silver, down at 560. So there's a real risk that we get a bit of follow-through on the downside tomorrow. Now, I'm not overextended financially, although I'm annoyed with myself for having the weak money control on this situation. But what concerns me most is that I know that some people track my trades, although I say always think about it if it's not appropriate for you, or see if it's appropriate for you, and second guess everything I do. Certainly don't do anything blindly. So I can afford this, although I'm vexed with the position. But what really does concern me is there may well be some people out there who started to come in on the baby steps accumulation when I first did, and are somewhat traumatized by this. Hopefully not, but that's a concern. Now, other metals here with the dollar rallying. That's what I've been saying, that was the risk here. If the dollar weakened, in other words, if we'd had the euro go back up to 129, then I think that you would have seen some quite firm action in the metals. They're not just a dollar story, of course, and they're not just a China story either. But the dollar story is certainly a headwind right now, and people are getting themselves into a flap over the China slowdown, so that's a bit of a headwind. But I maintain that the bigger long-term theme is the supply inelasticity. It takes several years to get production up substantially, and assuming all these companies go hell for leather to increase production substantially, for some of them, production is just physically incapable of increasing it substantially. And therefore, this is going to be a very, very bullish theme for the long term, but it's going to go in waves. I've mentioned that this metal sector, the whole commodity sector, is immensely volatile, and that just goes with the territory. Now, I'm not aggressively long in here, although my silver position is larger than I would like it to be under the circumstances. But palladium, I just put a toe in yesterday, and that was down here today, but well off the lows on the day. But certainly, while the dollar rallies, it'll be vulnerable to further setback. But that closed at 242.15. That was down almost $12 here. I bought it 250.4, I think, yesterday. I was tempted but resisted it when I saw it down at in the low 230s here today. The one that concerns me perhaps the most is the tin, which closed at 8,700 on the third month position. It's got the big backwardation, but if I'm underestimating the dollar's near-term upside scope, and I could be, if we get that squeeze on dollar bears, then that tin could come rattling down. I would almost certainly chop that position. Although, if it looks like it's going to come down more slowly and range about a lot, that big backwardation can would is would of course be working very much in my favor over time. And the other, I can't remember what I've. Oh, the lead. Lead fell back. That had shown a useful gain. Might have been, I would have been better off to have put in a in the money stop yesterday following those gains, but didn't. But again, that was sort of an initial stake. But until I see a downward dynamic by the dollar, I probably will hold off. Or I may hold off on additional purchases, or I'll put it this way: I'll be conservative. I'll be relatively cautious in that area. Now, Lastly, the energy. Well, but except to put this in context, I think that we'll have a long-term secular bull market in the metals. Now, energy. I've been saying for a while that the market was not paying attention to this. It is now. It's being reflected in the stock markets, but that, and I'd said that we were walking right into an energy shock. We had that spot crude touch $40 and closed at $39.93 here today. These markets are very, very firm, and I'm playing this through the natural natural gas. How's this all going to play out over the very long term? Well, I think that demand is going to continue to rise for petroleum products overall, and the big increase is occurring mainly in the emerging countries. China's demand is growing enormously. India's is growing very rapidly. I think those trends are likely to continue. We have the problem is not so much a shortage of actual oil, but it's a shortage of refining capacity, which is creating some backwardations. And in these markets, in most of the energy markets, we then get the NIMBY factor. Not in my backyard. Nobody wants an oil refiner anywhere near them, and it takes or anywhere near where they live. And of course, it takes years to build that plant and equipment. Then there's the terrorism threat. It's another problem. Then there's political developments, because this is really the only sort of trump card that Arab countries have. So there's a lot going on here to be really concerned about. I have mentioned that I'm going to increase my position in natural gas, and will almost certainly do that next week. I was hoping it would pull back a little bit, but it may not do so. And the technical patterns certainly suggest to me that all these contracts, all prices for all of these instruments are going to go up more. That will be bearish for bonds. It'll be bearish for stock markets, with the possible exception of some energy shares, and particularly in the discovery type of companies, energy discovery type of companies, and some of the non-petroleum energy concerns. They would also benefit from this. But while the impact of higher oil prices will be inflationary initially, it is deflationary over the middle to long, medium to longer term, because it's like a tax on consumption, as you know. So we have that to markets have that to contend with. And how I didn't answer my question, how will this really play out over the very long term? We've had energy crises before. My hunch is that this one's going to be more serious because of the rapid growth, and I don't think that the US is going to drop its consumption or retool and chuck in all the SUVs or whatever they're called for smart cars all that quickly. And I think that what it will mean is that the nuclear industry is likely to make a big, big comeback, because these wind farms, you know, are not going to make up the shortfall, even if you put up so many of them that we're having to pick our way through the fields. And you know, it's bird cuisinaire, as some wags have actually called it, but it's not the most efficient way of producing energy. Nuclear is very efficient. It's also very dangerous, and then there's also the NIMBY factor. But I don't see any other solution to this long-term energy problem until scientists eventually crack nuclear fusion on an economic basis, and that's just not on the horizon. Okay, I've probably run over, but that's the long-term outlook, and you have an absolutely splendid weekend. One last point, I'm way behind on subscribers' letters. I may come in over the weekend and do one or two audios on that. All the best.